This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za.
What do we do on Fridays? We do open conversations. This is a pure coincidence. So I'm going to tell you about my guest in a minute, but let me say hi to her. So, Ngoba, good morning.
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm fantastic. How are you?
It's great to have you. I haven't seen you in a while, but we do keep in touch.
Yeah.
You are very lucky today. There's cake in studio and cupcakes and with very beautiful artistic work. And I can't take any credit for that.
Okay.
It's just by pure coincidence that I have a very efficient government. I call my wife government. Government.
Sounds like your government is better than others.
No, if you were to govern the country, it would be at a better stage. So now this cake is written congratulations on your 100 days on air. So I've completed 100 days on air, it seems. Precisely tell which day. I think it was last week or early this week.
Okay.
My maths is completely losing me, partly because some days I've not been at work, so I must confess. But I've completed 100 days
Amazing.
At work, and that's quite interesting. And so it was a mini celebration. So we'll cut some cake, don't worry, when we leave. But you are here not to talk about my 100 days. You are here to talk about yourself and what you do. And actually, I'm trying to find something which I found an apt description of who you are. I was stalking your website.
Should I be worried?
I was stalking your website, and one of the people who have worked with you, Glenn Gillis, founder and CEO at Sea Monster, says, "Songoba is without doubt one of the most competent, insightful, and talented people I have ever met. She has an inquiring mind, great intelligence, and a huge work ethic, and yet she manages to combine this with a sense of fun and compassion." I'm glad they didn't say with a sense of humor, because I don't know you for a sense of humor.
No.
But definitely all of those things fit like a hand in glove when it comes to you. It's been a long time that I think I've known you for now, but what, 11, 12 years?
Sure.
And so much has happened in those 12 years, and you've transitioned and transitioned and transitioned in many spaces. But one thing that seems consistent in your transition is appreciation for innovation.
Yeah.
And at some point, you looked after FNB's Innovation Hub.
Correct.
How, let's start there, because I don't think we spend enough time and now you're with SMEs, but still trying to innovate new ways
Correct.
Of how to help them to be viable,
Correct.
To embed them, open themselves up to different markets in the African continent. When we talk innovation, at what level should we be thinking?
When we talk innovation, Lukwana, it really is at every level. I think this notion of expecting innovation to be only at a high level, heavy hitting new ideas, is a fallacy. And it's interesting that you bring up the FNB example. When I was heading up the FNB internal innovation program, what we found is that we had this mix of big blue skies, new innovative thinking that would end up becoming new business units, new lines of revenue. But on the other side, we also had smaller innovations, efficiencies, improvements, you know, time cuts, cost cutting. And what we actually always would stress is that even though the big ones are important, and that's what most people know, the power for FNB, and I still believe continues to be, in the smaller ones. So it was an 80-20, and the 80 was the small ones. The ones that no one knew about, the ones that weren't on a billboard, were actually the ones were bigger in volume, but also bigger in value, actually driving continuous improvement. So I think it's important that we're not, you know, mutually exclusive or extremist in our definition of innovation.
And you are looking for that big patent that you are going to have an
IP on. If you find it, great.
That's great. But still, I mean, I often say we wouldn't have GPS if somebody did not innovate street names.
Correct.
Right?
Correct.
And now, you also need some incentive for innovation to take place. I mean, the Vodacom case on Please Call Me is a clear, classic example of what happens when there's no inbuilt
incentive.
Incentive.
Yeah.
in terms of driving innovation. But where money is drying up, how do you incentivize innovation?
Yeah, I think it's true. The incentive is important. And I think it's a misnomer to always think incentive equals money. I mean, you know, even back in the F&B days, there was money. And that's probably what people spoke about or made the most noise about. But there was a lot of internal recognition. There was a lot of internal celebration. There was, you know, top leadership when the CEO of the group and the CEO of F&B is the one, you know, getting involved in your innovation and showing appreciation, or you're being, you know, basically, you know, dubbed as the new CEO of a brand new business unit that didn't exist. I think there's something to agency where people can see themselves achieving what they were out to achieve. There's something to recognition. And if you're coming up with an innovation that's a business idea, that business has got sustainability and a lifeline of its own before any, you know, financial incentive. So I think we talk about money, and like you're saying, money's tight. There's different ways around this, which is build a business, build something with a sustainable revenue line where your own financial well-being is tied to that thing so that you can actually benefit from it. I think that actually makes sometimes more sense than a upfront, here's a lump sum, and even if this thing fails 1 year from now, you still walked away with your lump sum. Yeah,
absolutely. And I mean, you not only have you looked after innovation, you continue with self-reinvention yourself. I mean, you've been in banking, in education, sometime quasi in NSFAS. We'll talk a bit about that time and your interactions with cabinet at a crucial turning point for NSFAS when Sizwe Nqasana was there as the board chairperson. And now, you know, fintech space type of thing. What is it that, you know, stimulates you and make you so adaptable to change?
It's a good question, and I've been asked this many times because I think our generation's got that, you know, that reputation.
But then the system teaches us specialize. Even in academia, they still ask, what's your specialization? I say, I don't know.
I struggle with that. And I think the best way I've heard this described is when they talk about millennials as slashies, the slashy generation. Because in our generation, when you ask someone, what do you do? You know, like you're a great example. I'm an academic slash I'm a political commentator slash I'm a broadcaster slash, you know, and there's all of those things. And really, that's been my life. I mean, I've drifted very far from my original specialization, if we can call it that, at university, which was actuarial science, which a lot of people get shocked to hear. Like you said, I've done time in banking. Even within banking, I was working in the marketing department. I was in innovation. I was then an executive assistant, you know. And then I moved into education. There I became an operations person, a special projects person, doing branding and all the rest. And I think for me, what's driven this is really an appreciation of the big picture. I think that this notion, it's important to have specialists, but it's also important to have generalists. And I think each person needs to figure out where is their sweet spot where they can add value. For me, what I've learned is that I have the ability to make high-level sense of complicated systems, but also have the ability to drill down into specific detail. So therefore, I have pivoted in different ways. But if you ask me about the skill set I'm applying, it's probably the same across all these different industries and all these different things that I get involved in. And I think for me, the driving force has been about impact and value creation. You can do many things, Lukwana, as you know, and a lot of them don't add value. You know, a lot of them don't change anything for the person, Ekaya, for me in, you know, the East Rand, Eforslo. And for me, it's been about what are the things that need to be fixed and need to be improved? Where can I go, add an impact, walk away and look back and think, yeah, there we did work and there's an impact that flows from it. Then it's next problem.
But do you ever fear, Songoba, to be addicted to the idea of making impact to a point where you burn yourself out and... You are in so many. I mean, I'm looking at you. You've been at Vits Convocation. You've got an NPO on empowering young girls.
Kamvelihle.
Yeah, that's the word I'm looking for. And you've done work with, you know, World Economic Forum, Global Shapers.
Yes.
When do you call it to an end and say, yeah, no more, and I'm not going to carry on and take on another task?
I'm still alive. So that means there's still energy, there's still things to be done. I'm laughing because burnout is a thing. Let me not minimize burnout.
Yeah.
I think I have crossed that path 3 times in my life. So I want to take it seriously. And I think taking care of my mental health has been important. Drawing a line, which I didn't have in earlier years of my life, between my personal personal well-being and being at my best, which then allows me to give my best to whatever I'm working on and involved in, has become a very important, non-compromisable principle. So I think it's important to get that balance. In my 20s, I went full throttle and I burnt out many times and had to recover. And they say it takes you 3 to 4 years to fully recover from burnout.
So if you've had three, you need to recover at least some 12 years.
Let's just say some of them happened while still recovering from the previous one. So yeah, I think I don't get tired of adding value. I'm specific about balancing it out with my well-being and mental health and not burning out again. But I think I always say that one day I will either run out of life or I will run out of energy.
Yeah.
I want the running out of energy to happen first before running out of life.
Yeah. You want to sequence it. I once said on air, I would love to have a deadline. If I could know what on this day, the famous Ixilongo will trumpet and then it will be Chaile. I go back to my creator. I'd enjoy that. And then how do you forgive yourself on the days or the weeks? Sometimes I have 3 weeks straight. I don't attach a thing.
Yeah.
How do you forgive yourself in those moments when you literally feel like it's a slump? You want to write, you can't write. You want to think, you can't think. You just want to be in bed all day.
You know, sometimes, Lukwana, then I stay in bed all day. I don't like...
You're so fortunate because now I have to be here at 9 o'clock every morning. And I keep saying, hey, I'm going to lay your pass and I went in at the same time. It can be rough for some of us.
And you have to show up. It's not just that desk where no one will notice that there's no one there.
You must make sure. But I mean, what are the ingredients to that acknowledgement that I'm not going to be at my best all the time? Because I think a lot of people struggle with that and they beat themselves up so much and it starts affecting their mental well-being. Mm. It starts affecting their confidence in themselves.
Yeah. I think for me, it's come with age, thank goodness, which is the reality that you can't operate at peak performance all the time. I mean, you see it even in sports and athletes. Mm. You need downtime. And I think for a while, I just went 100%, 100%, 100%. And you would learn the consequences of that. I think before your body tells you it's enough, you need to be checking in often enough to realize, I'm on low battery here. You know, there's an analogy that says, look at how we care for our cell phones and how we never, ever allow them to hit, you know, low battery or just switch off. But we don't do that for ourselves. So I think for me, it's become something I've implemented through specific routines. One of them is like just having some sort of check-in with myself on how I'm doing.
Yeah.
The other is creating a routine and rhythm around rest, you know, which I've struggled with. I struggled to switch off. I struggled to do nothing, but I've learned to do the things that are different, like creative, right? Yes. Brain energy that, you know, reinvigorate the spirit. So for me, it's been important to do literally once a quarter. You will probably find me off for a week, if not 2 weeks. And this is something that is cast in stone. And then effectively within those 3 month periods of the quarter, I'll be checking in once a month. And if needs be, I will be out of town for a long weekend and probably in the bush. No connection is the best one.
Absolutely.
Or out of the country and don't say yes to the roaming, you know, offer. You know, so it's come through those rhythms, which is just to check in and be present and not just speed along, which I've been guilty of many, many times, and to create. Just as important as that meeting request in my diary to be here is the meeting request to be with myself and have some downtime on the weekend.
Sbaweli shot left, man.
Yay.
But COVID, waves and so on. So how have you managed to balance out during COVID? Because we then literally boomed into transitioning to the, you know, virtual space. The virtual space became so demanding.
It's exhausting. I think screen fatigue is a lot, something real for a lot of us. I think for me, what it's meant is that I've had to be deliberate on the daily routines. So whether it's in my diary, booking out a lunch break explicitly where I'm not on another call, whether it's booking out 15-minute breaks to be outside, ending my day through taking a walk, you know, even if it's walking around the little garden or the complex or in the complex, or, you know, once if you can go out, do that. But I've had to be quite deliberate incorporate in the daily routine, some sort of exercise, some sort of quiet time where I can hear myself think. In order, because I now, you know, like you say, the short left's not an option. And it's what it's meant is that I can't wait 3 months to check in and take some time out. It's meant every day.
You have to
what
do
have
something.
You done today exactly to tune in, you know? And I think with lockdown, I mean, sure, who would have thought?
Not in the wildest dreams. We had so many plans last year, but COVID. Anyway, people of power, it is 22 minutes past 11. My guest is Sonqoba Vuba, co-founder and managing director at Perpetuate with an 8. I'm going to get to that with her at some point. The line to dial if you want to be part of this conversation is 0861-987-000. I mean, Sonqoba, come April 2019. President Cyril Ramaphosa appoints a commission on fourth industrial revolution. Mm. I look at the list, smack bang, your name is there. I'm like, oh, well, I'm not so surprised. How has that been? Mm. It used to be such a buzzword. It seems as if COVID has overtaken the fourth industrial revolution.
Which is not a bad thing. I must say, I keep saying COVID in many ways accelerated some of the trends that are inherent in the 4IR. So this whole digital thing, this thing of existing in physical and digital, you know, how with ease now we maneuver between social media and real life, Zoom calls and real life. That's really 4IR, you know, and the technologies that enable it. So yeah, April 2019, hey?
So what happens? Let me actually ask you. Who gives you the call?
Yeah.
Surely because before that list comes out, you get a ring.
You don't get calls, you get emails with information that you need to submit. So, yeah. So, I mean, a lot of people ask me, how did I end up on this commission? And I always say, guys, read gazettes because people don't like reading government gazettes. And there is so much information there.
And there's so much in a single day in a gazette.
Exactly. So how this happened is the Department of Communications, which is now Communications and Digital Technologies, which was, you know, kind of mandated by the president to be the secretariat of this commission, put out a gazette calling for nominations. Lucky for me, this is what I've been doing, you know, even without, you know, a presidential, you know, view. So, someone said to me, hey, have you seen the Gazette? Take a look. I'm nominating you. And I decided, you know, this person who's nominating me, I'm Tembisisi. So I'm going to nominate myself too, you know. And literally a couple of months later was contacted to say you've been shortlisted. But in order for you to get to the next stage, we need to do a security clearance.
Yeah.
So these are the emails.
Fingerprints.
Yeah. Please declare all your interests. You know, where are you making your money from? What boards do you sit on? Where? All of that. And actually after that, I heard nothing. So I thought, Haike, they found something and it's okay. And until I saw the announcement from the president saying that I'd been appointed.
Are you telling me that I probably knew before you?
I think you were one of the people on Facebook who tagged me before I knew. Because that day my phone just kept buzzing and going off. I didn't know.
In this country,
I did not know.
There's a lot to fix.
I did not know.
Don't you think there's a lot to fix?
I must say that one is the least of the ones we need to fix.
Absolutely. But how is the work going with the commission? I mean, as you are saying, COVID-19 has sort of accelerated the enabling instruments of the fourth industrial revolution.
Yeah.
But it might not have accelerated our intellectual grasp with the 4IR and positioning of ourselves as a country in terms of what is it that we are going to contribute.
Correct. So, I mean, the commission, and I always say this, and it's important to say it because every time we do consultations, people would think I'm working for government. So I must start there. This commission was made up of 30 individuals who were a cross-cutting, you know, mix of society, public servants, private sector people, entrepreneurs, youth,
academics,
indeed. So it was a mix. And I must also say that the terms of reference were broad. Our terms of reference were come up with a strategic plan for how South Africa can leverage the 4IR in order to become more globally competitive. That was our work. And it needed to cut across private sector, public sector, innovation, commercialization, resources, you know, including energy crisis that we're looking at
Absolutely.
Now. So I think that the work was broad. I think it was great to have a cross-cutting, you know, sectional of society. But I also think that working with 30-odd people is tough. So it was ups and downs. But I think at the end, what we've come up with, which was really a document that shared detailed and summary version, because, you know, not all of us are dedicated to the reading. So there's a short version of the report and a long version of the report, which literally goes into depth about a number of things. Commercialization, yeah. And commercialization and innovation, which includes a lot of focus on our universities, IPs in there, SMEs, and what type of things need to happen. We talk up a lot about 4IR infrastructure, which sometimes not even 4IR, it's 3IR and 2IR infrastructure.
I wanted to say that. Yes. I won't say who, but somebody who has led government said to me, hey, you know, Mnguni, we are talking about 4IR. We have not mastered the second industrial revolution. Mm. Look at Eskom. What is the impact of that backlog?
I responded to that so many times. And the reality is that the industrial revolutions were in our global. You can't say, sorry, as soon as I cross the border into, you know, Lesotho, can I please then only go back to second industrial revolution? And only when I go to Europe and America can I be in the fourth industrial revolution. The realities of globalization is that we are in the fourth industrial revolution. The fact that we have backlogs, that's our issue to deal with. Mm. And sometimes this focus on, and you're right, second industrial revolution was electricity. They, you know, driving here did not feel like I was in the fourth industrial revolution.
Not at all.
You know, and it's part of the reality. But the reality as well is that we can either decide to do this the hard way or the efficient way. The hard way is, okay, let's go back to second industrial revolution and ignore the fact that everyone else is in the fourth industrial revolution. Let's then catch up second industrial revolution and master it, like you said. Mm. Then let's move on to third industrial revolution, which was software computing, software revolution, and then master it. By the time we get to fourth industrial revolution with that approach, we'll be in the eighth.
I mean, Europe is, some countries in Europe and Japan are already talking about 5.0.
Exactly, they're planning and defining, exactly.
Because they are now saying, fourth industrial revolution is a bit too mechanical.
Exactly.
And how do we then infuse a humanity, a humanized spirit? Because I mean, Japan, some hotel tried to have robots as you know, to conduct room service, and so, and people just said no, thank you. It ends here. You can advance, but we still want human beings coming and giving us room service.
So I think the dilemma for South Africa is, yes, we're behind, and it's not just South Africa. I'd say the continent. And the reality is that we need to say, okay, these are the things we struggle with. Let's talk about energy. We struggle with reliable energy, right, in this country, on this continent. Instead of saying,
and I mean, about 60% to 70% of the population in the continent actually is without energy. They don't have electricity.
There we go. And the question becomes, how do we look at the tools that are available in fourth industrial revolution to fix that problem? So instead of saying we're only going to look at what was available in second industrial revolution, which was just electricity through coal and whatever power, now we say, actually, we're not going to only look at those tools. We have third industrial revolution tools, fourth industrial revolution tools. How do we use those to fix that problem?
Absolutely.
And this is what we call kind of leapfrogging, which people also get upset about hearing, which is you can either slowly crawl, or you can use the future technology to leapfrog the
now,
problem you have.
Now, we're going to talk about leapfrogging. Part of my multitasking is that the corner of my eye must also have visuals to see in that booth that Nomusa Zwane Masigode is ready with Power News headlines, but my guest is Sonqoba Vuba. Please do dial in on 0861-987-000.
Power Talk with Lukhona Mnguni. Call Lukhona on 0861-987-000.
Indeed, it is 26 minutes to 12. I'm trying to say 26 minutes to 11 because I'd love to buy myself more time with Sonqoba. I was complaining to her. This hour is just flying, and I know once we open up those lines on 0861-987-000, it will fly even more. Do join us on these open conversations. These are really beautiful conversations. I mean, Sonqoba, you are talking about the idea of, you know, leapfrogging.
Mm.
We've seen some countries do this. You know, the Asian tigers we've spoken about. We've seen where Singapore has managed to niche itself. China itself, in many instances. I mean, now they're even... did you ever think that China would introduce a three-children policy.
Never.
They are now saying they're having an aging population, mm-hmm. because about 15% of their population is above 60.
Correct.
And their strength is labor.
Correct.
So they're worried
it's
now.
A problem.
Now China wants people to make babies,
yep.
you know? How do we leapfrog as South Africa to a point where we can niche ourselves? Because when I look at us now, after the gold rush and the Kimberley black hole, we haven't really managed to niche ourselves.
Yeah. I think, we debated this so many times. I think, and the one thing I took away was when people talk about creating a strategy, it means making a choice.
Mm.
I don't think in South Africa we've been good at making a choice. We try to be all things to all people, tick all the right boxes, make everyone happy. And this was part of the major struggle with even this 4IR strategy, which was, what are we going to focus on as a country?
Yeah.
There are many things happening.
So many elements.
It's actually getting more and more complicated, you know? And some of the key things that came out, I think one for me that stood out was, you know, we've been a mineral-rich country. Ironically, that does not stop with 4IR. When you look at 4IR, there's a full value chain for 4IR. And one of the greatest discoveries for me over this period was the minerals that are required to create lithium batteries in our cell phones, let alone in batteries for energy storage.
And catalytic converters.
Yes,
these are the things
exactly.
that I hear.
And one of the key minerals required for that, the biggest exporter of it is China. But you know who holds the largest reserves in the world of that mineral? South Africa.
Mm.
How many mines do we have at the time licensed? It was probably about late 2019, beginning of 2020, licensed to mine that mineral. There was only one.
What?
There was only one.
And today?
Not much has changed. I think we've probably moved to two or three. Right?
Talk is cheap, eh?
Talk is the cheapest.
And something about we've spoken so much as a country about mineral beneficiation because of these added advantages.
Yes.
Instead of, you know, shipping the raw material.
And import it back in.
And this is why I was so unimpressed with former President Jacob Zuma. I think it was this 2010 State of the Nation address where he announced this big, huge infrastructure investment. But it was really about shipping out natural resources. They wanted to make sure that the rail, that the Richards Bay terminal is expanded.
To get stuff out.
The raw material to get it out and get it out quicker.
Yes.
So deplete the life of mines and so on. Who should be doing this thinking and making these choices? Because clearly we're at a point now, if you listen to the lines when I filled them here on Power Talk, people are frustrated.
Yes.
I mean, one young man today called me and said, you know what? I'm frustrated. As youth, we don't have jobs.
I heard him.
They give us 350
rands. I heard him.
I can't marry my girlfriend. Then I'm a blesser. Now,
I can't get a job to sustain my life, let alone have a girlfriend and do all the normal things that we take for granted.
Because umjolo now une financial
management.
So who's meant to make these decisions to leapfrog us?
Mm. I think, Lukana, the reality is that we don't live, you know, we're just talking now about specialists and generalists. We don't live in a siloed reality anymore.
Mm.
We know now as South Africans that if private sector is doing what they need to do, but public sector is not doing what they need to do, we have a problem. If private sector is not doing what they need to do, but labor unions are doing what they need to do, we have a problem.
Yeah.
This whole thing of thinking that we can solve problems in silos,
we are segmented.
It doesn't work because there's knock-on effects and we're dealing with a complex system. You know, when you talk about systems thinking, it means the system must work and all the cogs in the system must work together. And unfortunately, that's where we get it wrong. We have brilliant policies. Sometimes I argue that, you know, our government, you know, even leaps beyond just policy and creating an enabling environment and wants to do, you know, and there's some areas where they must do, but there's also some areas where they must just create the environment and let go, you know. Private sector as well. Sometimes private sector acts like their government, you know, and wants to be the policy maker.
And they want to dictate.
Yes, and,
they say,
dictate.
We are not being listened at NADLEC and we are going to walk away from the economy. Reconstruction and recovery plan, which is what I think pushed the president to make those announcements yesterday and concessions. Oh, Pumla on Twitter. Okay, Pumla, I'll introduce my guest again. I just get carried away in conversation. My guest is Sonqoba Vuba, co-founder and managing director. character at Perpetuate, and really an interesting soul I've known for a very, very long time. Sonqoba, Umduduzi has a question for you on Twitter that I must ask you. What sort of skills do individuals need to invest in for the future, especially as a professional?
Love that, because I think the decide on whether we'll succeed or fail at this revolution is skills, to be honest, not just as a country, but as a continent. I think the, you know, we talk about job losses. I always say it's not just about job losses, guys. There's jobs created too. And the question is where the net effect sits. Yeah. So if you're only racing to, you know, automate, then job losses. If you're not racing as fast, if not faster, in skills development, then your net will be negative.
Yeah.
And the skills, if you think about it, it's, I always say, you and I went to university together. You know, when we used to look at East Campus versus West Campus, the commerce students versus like the more artsy BA students, that world is gone.
Yeah.
As an actual science student who has done full on left brain, I have had to embrace right brain skills, creativity, storytelling. I've had to like focus on scenario planning. I've had to focus on, you know, communication, critical thinking, analytical thinking. All of these skills need to come together. When you talk about certain specific skills, we have a massive shortage of data scientists in this country and beyond. We have a massive shortage, you know, even talk about artisans, people who work with their hands without the theory necessarily of university. We have a shortage of those.
Then we have a problem when Cubans
come in and
let's not go there. Carry on.
We have a shortage of people who can code. We have a shortage of people who can effectively, you know, deal with the new and upcoming technologies, machine learning, artificial intelligence, 3D printing, advanced manufacturing. You know, we have a shortage of people who have high EQ. Like, I'm just going to call it as it is. We have a lot of people with high IQ, but we don't have a lot of people with high EQ.
And by the way, people of power, EQ, emotional intelligence. Knowing how to have interpersonal skills.
There we go. So I think that there's a range of these things. And one of the things I've struggled with is, even when we look at the HRDCs, the Human Resource Development Council, which needs to be reinvigorated.
And repositioned.
Yes. Ultimately. When we look at the list, when they come up with scarce skills, Who? How many people have seen?
Did you see the Home Affairs list?
And my big thing is, number one, let's be clear what scarce skills are. Very few people even know what's in that report.
Yeah.
But even if we all knew what's in that report, I would even
argue,
does it represent the future? It's one way to come up with scarce skills looking behind us. It's a different approach to look forward.
To be aspirational.
You know, and also include that in your scarce skills list, because this is where some of these things would come out. And I also say, you know, we say that there's lots of unemployment. If you're looking for where to look at skills development, go look at vacancy lists. Go look at, you know, like the many vacancies that companies say they can't find skills for. That's your scarce skills list. And as a professional, if you are in a role, and I think a lot of us may find ourselves in this role if you're a professional, where part of your job is technical skills, it's repetitive work. Part of your job is thinking work. Find the solution. Apply your mind. Mm. The repetitive stuff, which is administrative, will be automated. Move yourself away from those type of roles.
Yeah.
And if you can, be the one that automates it within your role. If 70% of your role is admin, find a way to automate it yourself.
So basically, we must also be preoccupied with, how do I replace myself
before someone else replaces me?
Hallelujah.
There we go.
I get you. I wonder what that Oza means for us on this desk. but we will have to think about that. There's a shout out from Boitumelo Putsane, who says, Sonqoba is and has been a natural leader from our high school days at Germiston High. She was our head girl, I think, since she was in grade 10 till matric. Power to her, our amazing woman from Force Low.
That is amazing. Thank you. That is nice.
Entle says, I must ask you, what's your take on professional bodies, just numbers on job losses as well as so-called scarce skills being filled by non-South Africans?
There's a few questions there.
Yeah.
I think
they're loaded.
Yeah, they're very loaded, but welcome to South Africa. I think professional bodies, I think that it's important. And I say professional bodies, even for labor unions, it's important for these bodies to start taking stock of what their purpose is. and how they achieve that purpose. I think just doing things the way they've done them before is no longer going to work. My professional body is an actual professional body.
Yeah.
One issue we've been struggling with for years and continue with is transformation. But I'd argue that another is this automation of things that happen. And some of the things that actuaries do who are well sought after professionals, 0% unemployment, some of the things we do are being automated.
Algorithms are taking
Yes, the model can build itself now, you know?
It doesn't even need you to make inputs and design.
And the question becomes, how, as a professional body, do you lead that transition so that actuaries can be adding more societal benefits? So I think that's important. And this thing of like, you know, this thing of foreigners coming in for jobs, I think it's so complex and so multifaceted and complex that you can't come up with a single answer. We're trying to balance out how successful economies import skills that they don't have, but also what they manage to do is that they manage to transfer those skills and develop them in-house. So importing skills becomes a buying us time while we develop the skills or actually build them ourselves or transfer the skills. We have lost that balance. And while it's a global society and skills are mobile, there needs to be hard questions asked as a country of what we're doing around skills development and actually transfer of skills in this country.
In fact, I'm going to go to the line on 0861-987-000, but I do want to come back to this idea where we talk about this demographic dividend we have as the African continent, which I thought we would then be investing in developing skills that we can export. I was in a conference in the Vatican, and one of the Italian academics said, why are we having a session about youth? We're talking about a youth that we don't have. And I thought, we have the youth in Africa. Lots of it. We can give it to you, as long as you pay for it. Jerry, good morning.
Morning, Minister of Power Talk. How are you?
I'm good. How are you, Jerry?
if I could be brutally honest with your guest, my greetings to her as well, I would say that who told you that South Africa do not have enough skill? But I would be fair. I would be fair with you. Let me tell you that the case study is a guy of Eskom. You remember the guy who actually invented the police call?
Yes.
That is one only example that I can give you. But the question that I can ask you is that, is South Africa's economy doing very well? And who is the majority of the people in South Africa? It's black people. No three people can come from Cuba or China or USA or somewhere in the world that can bring the large magnitude of skill in South Africa for South African economy to thrive. It's black people. You know what is the problem, Guni? Is that white people in the private sector, white employers, do not want to recognize black people as the highly skilled people. In most cases, you have car manufacturers in South Africa. The people who are working there are black people. We are given the job to do, but without any skill, we have to invent our own ideas to make sure that project will be successful. So I am telling you, the South Africans are highly skilled. The problem is that the system in place does not want to recognize South Africans as highly skilled people because they don't have a degree or a certificate from somewhere else. But these companies must be compelled to offer certificate for people who are doing these cars, who are manufacturing these components. They must be recognized with the certificate and trade test.
Okay.
When will be recognized as highly skilled? But South Africans are highly skilled people, my brother.
Jerry, I get you loud and clear. AB, good morning.
Morning, Lukonazo.
I'm good. How are you?
Good, good, man. Good morning to you and
Go for it, AB.
Yes. No. My input and questions are related to the recommendations of the 4IR Commission.
Yes.
And my first input would be that I assume that the commission is completed and the commission is sort of disbanded. And for me, is a problem, because then how do you ensure that the recommendations are? That's the first issue I have. The second issue is the recommendations that the 4IR Commission, they seem to touch on everything, and they seem to be all over the place. And the reason I say this, for instance,
AB, AB, just take, I'm going to take your line back to Snetemba and try clean it up so that we get good reception out of it. Tabo, good morning.
Morning, Lukona, your guest. Lukona, I think we need more of your guest.
I agree with you. I could clone her if I could.
Yeah, you know, we've been led by men for far too long. Nothing has changed. She knows sure. what she's talking about.
Mm.
Lukona, I can tell you, Samsung, only Samsung company, has the highest GDP of greater than of a South African government.
So you're devices, saying the revenue of that company?
Yeah, yes. Devices, smart devices, they need minerals. Minerals that we do have,
mm-hmm.
but we've got nothing to show. Lukona, I have an IT company.
Mm.
I design concepts. Technology is the simplest thing to do. It's like taking our day-to-day struggles, only simplifying it through the digital. I have so many documents that I have. I'm designing concepts every single day. You know what's the problem, Lukona?
What is
it? We are not given the chance. That's it.
Mm. Thank you. I hear you loud and clear. Thank you very much. Junior Pretoria West, good morning.
Hey, how you doing, Lukona?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm all right. Congratulations on your 100 days on air.
Thank you, buddy.
100%. I'd like to congratulate your listener, your guest there. She's on point, bruh.
Mm.
You know, every single time I call here, I'm always criticizing. And I've actually realized that we don't get anywhere by criticizing. And I think it's an economic behavioral outcome of the recession that we're experiencing, especially in sub-Saharan Africa. We tend to basically find ourselves criticizing what the lack instead of appreciating what we have.
Yeah.
We have innovative youth. We have innovative minds. We have leaders who, if given the chance, both by private as well as public sector, coming together to create that value chain that she talks about so much. And, I wish I could sit there and still pick her mind, because it actually invigorated me to park on the side of the road to say, I'll stop here, even if it takes me 45 minutes, just to have her context or just to chat with her when I come back from Gaborone.
Mm.
It's that situation that you want people who are visionary and thinking about the future. Our previous leaders, those who were the outliers, were visionary thinkers. They were not thinking about themselves and the present and how they can put food on the table.
Mm.
They were thinking about tomorrow and the three generations.
Absolutely.
There's an old saying that says, excuse me the rhetoric, but it says the stupid man actually thinks about one generation.
Mm.
But a visionary thinks about three generations.
Mm.
So then, when she talks about that generational wealth creation, it's not just the public sector that has to do it or government that has to do it. We've got innovators who are sitting, innovators who are sitting about Tembisa, who are making headway, but they're in the informal market where government cannot actually get tax revenue from that because there's no outlet for them to actually have the facility to actually make
revenue. Thank you so much. Let's leave it there so that I give other people a chance. I'm looking at that watch. AB is back. Please complete that point you're making on the 4IR Commission recommendations.
All right. Thanks, Lukona. For me, the first thing is that it doesn't come out clear to sort of recommend to government that government must digitalize.
Mm.
Because if government does not digitalize, then we can't even begin to talk about 4IR.
Mm.
Because, I can't be an SMME and still have to fill in documents and go and pop them somewhere in the middle of nowhere in a municipality. So that's for me that it doesn't come out clear in the recommendation. That's for me the first thing. The second thing that also does not come out clear is the fact that government needs to start procuring what is produced locally.
Mm.
And the DTI has already started the process. For instance, smart meters, whether it's water or electricity, are designated for local manufacturing. So if government can identify more, especially electronic and 4IR-related products, and the recommendation, I expected the recommendation of the 4IR Commission to talk to that.
Yeah.
It's more, there was a bias towards machine learning and artificial intelligence, and it's understandable because the chairperson obviously
AB, I hear you. I think let me leave you there on that note, but thank you for those. I've got some other people lined up on the line. Tlhakanipho, good morning.
Morning, Lukona. Well, Lukona, partly I would like to say I disagree with the lady on the studio because on my perspective, because I'm on the grassroots level, I see all these things that are happening. Look, Lukona, out of 10 people that I train daily, 7 of them are foreigners. So this thing that the technocrats, they will always say South African are unskilled, there's a fourth revolution and all that. That is to... That is to what to dispatch us as South Africans.
Because and what field are you training in, Nhlakanipho?
Look, for the sake of security, I wouldn't like to disclose okay. so that other companies they might pick up my name. But this is what I want to say. This thing, that technically, we see, we are talking across each other, and as long as we're still talking across each other with the basic people that are on the grassroots level, they can't get employment, and the employment is goes to the people from outside that are foreigners. I'm sorry to say that, but indeed, it is foreigners because I've got stats.
Okay.
Lastly, in 2016, I was conducting AEC election. Guess the IT specialists, they were coming from where? From Zimbabwe.
Okay, Nhlakanipho, let's leave it there. I've got other people on the line. Eddie, good morning.
Hey, Mthembu, congratulations on your 100 days in the studio.
Ah, thank you. I should have known that you'd call in if Sonqoba is here, Mr. Brandt.
Of course, I would have. Mthembu, what a phenomenal person you have in your studio. I'm so envious of you. Yeah, great input as well. You know, I actually attended a session where she was a panelist, was former President Thabo Mbeki.
Yes, we
And I think great ideas obviously came from that session, and subsequently she became a commissioner. So I would have followed her work from that moment, and to date, I'm such a big fan of her work. But importantly, I just want to say, yes, I agree with one of the previous callers who would have said that I would have expected that the commission would continue to see the execution and implementation of what they have recommended to ensure that it happens. I mean, we know that when it comes to delivery and execution, government tends to take its time and so forth. So we need a technocrats of Sonqoba's nature to be able to assist
to drive
in
that
execution.
Process.
Absolutely,
Eddie.
And that's my 2 cents.
Thank you very much, Budi. Let's leave it there. And last bite. I need to have some time for Sonqoba to respond.
Good morning, Lukona.
Morning.
On your century.
Thank you.
Sonqoba, malibongwe.
Igam.
Sonqoba, you are such a breath of fresh air, I must say. My question to you is, are you really, really intending to sit on the government? Like the previous caller had said, during your session with the former President Thabo Mbeki, you were just flowing. I fell in love with you there and there. But again, now, the professional bodies, guys, are we really honestly saying professional bodies are there for us, the professionals? Are we honestly happy about professional bodies? Is that how we're going to end it here?
Okay.
And my question again is, why are professional bodies not sitting on the SOEs, especially to make a KPI for them to groom young up and coming artisans, technicians, and engineers? For them, that when they leave, the older ones, why are they getting the great beards to come back and teach the younger guys when there's new technology? What are we doing?
Yeah.
We're getting great beards to teach young guys.
And
are we developing
let's leave it there as in JBN. So Nqoba, you have a minute and a half at most.
Okay.
And I think some were just comments, but just respond.
Yeah. So I thank you. I appreciate that, Lukona, and thank you for all the callers. I think the most important one that I want to make sure I address first is the commission. I think AB mentioned like the recommendations are quite broad, and it's true, AB, because if you read the terms of reference of the commission, they were also broad, and therefore we had to make sure we're responding to each of the specific areas around skills, innovation, you know, energy, and so on. So they are broad, but however, in the short version of the report, there are 8 key recommendations, which we felt that there could be 200 recommendations, but if you do not get these 8 right, then you have no leg to stand on in order to enable the others. So those recommendations spoke about the need around development of human capital and skills. There are specifics in the report about which skills to develop, case studies of where we've done that well and that we need to basically grow. There is I laughed about the focus on artificial intelligence and machine learning. Yes, our chair is very passionate about that topic.
Absolutely.
We had many debates as the commission. So one of the specific recommendations talks about, let's not just talk about artificial intelligence for the sake of it, but let us start applying artificial intelligence and all these technology tools to problems we have, you know. Another focused on specifically around data. guys, innovation is built predominantly on data. In South Africa, our government department's data doesn't even speak to each other, let alone in the same department. And there's a need for South African government to get its data correct in order to enable innovation, but also quicker service delivery and actually responding to
and
tech.
And it goes
we
back
have.
To that digitization
correct.
Question because
you
I was
can't
seeing a
do
picture
it.
Of mountains
you
of papers.
You can't do it without it. Exactly. So there are eight, I'm just mentioning some of them. Another was the 4R infrastructure. You know, there's infrastructure that needs to be built in this country that without it, we are talking about pipe dreams here. And I think it's important to focus on those eight recommendations as a starting point. Then for those, what we were conscious of was that will take time to get right. For those who are in specific areas like skills development, in the long report, there are detailed recommendations for skills. Those who are in energy and resources, there are detailed recommendations for resources. So I think that that's important. And then when we talk about what happens now, yes, the commission came to a close at the end of last year, December. I remember receiving that notification. And the reality is that our terms of reference were come up with a plan and a direction.
And you did that.
And government now needs to make a decision how to
proceed. Thank you very much for joining me today. Co-founder and managing director, Perpetuate. We didn't even get to Perpetuate. It's Perpetuate with an 8.Africa. That's the website for her work. I think everybody will agree if I say we need a second conversation and they'll give me permission.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.